I think a lot of times we talk about who the decision makers are and we think that it's the label heads, but it really more so is Bill Ackman and Len Blavatnik and folks like that that really are the people that pull the strings in this industry. Hey, welcome to Trapital. I'm your host, Dan Runcy. This is your place to gain insights on the business that shapes music, media, and culture. We dive deep into the companies and moguls who start the trends that shape the rest of the business world. On April 11th, Taylor Swift's music appeared back on TikTok, despite her record label Universal Music Group's ongoing dispute with TikTok over low royalty payments and the use of Universal Music Group songs to train TikTok's AI models. Taylor Swift made this move in advance of her 11th studio album, The Tortured Poets Department, which came out on April 19th. There is a lot to dig into with this one, starting with Taylor. She's been an advocate for artists and pushing to make sure that they get their fair share from the tech companies that are licensing their music, whether it's Apple Music in past years or Spotify in past years. So where does TikTok land in this? And how does this move line up with the strategy that we've seen from Taylor Swift over the years? And what is it unique about TikTok that she was willing to make this happen? But what does this also mean for Universal Music Group and TikTok? As we've talked about in past episodes, Universal Music Group has changed a lot in its public perception and the moves that it's made ever since it became a public company in September 2021. But who is in power there, and how does that shape a lot of the negotiations and ongoing disputes that we've seen specifically with TikTok? We dive into that. Then we also look at TikTok and what does their bargaining position look like now that on the other side of the table, Universal Music Group's biggest artist is willing to go direct with them, and how that may shape future deals coming down the pipeline, and if this impacts the closure of having a resolution anytime soon. I'm joined by Tati Sirisano from Media Research to get into all of this and more. So let's dive in. All right, we're here to do a deep dive conversation on UMG, TikTok, Taylor Swift, and I'm joined by Tati Sirisano. Welcome back to the pod.
Thanks, Dan. Always good to be back.
Will you be checking out the Tortured Poets Department live activation at the Grove in LA leading up to this album?
I will not be there and did not know that it existed, but I'm not surprised that it does.
It was one of those things that I saw where I'm like, okay, the promotional cycle is here. We're making this happen. Taylor Swift is doing a direct deal with TikTok in order to have her music on the platform in advance of this album coming out. What were your thoughts? Were you surprised by this?
I was not that surprised, to be honest. You know, on the one hand, I think it struck a nerve with a lot of people, particularly because of stances that Taylor has taken in the past. Spotify with Apple Music. In the past, she's sort of spoken out for artists that are smaller than her and how they should be paid more from streaming and all these things. But on the other hand, I mean, I think the past like 5 or so years of her career have really been all about this narrative of taking control of her career, owning her rights. It kind of fits in with that whole character arc for her. And if there's one thing that Taylor loves, it's a narrative and a story and a character arc. And I think hers for the past couple of years has been about retribution and ownership and honestly, revenge. I think there's a lot of her feeling like, I want to be on top and show everyone just how far I can go. And she kind of hasn't been shy about those ambitions. So honestly, I wasn't that surprised by it.
I wouldn't go as far as to say I necessarily expected it. I think that would have been a bit assumptive, but I wasn't surprised by it. And I wasn't surprised by it because of how big TikTok has been for her in this past 5 years of her career. You look at a song like Cruel Summer, that becomes a song of the summer 4 years after its release because of TikTok. You look at everything that happened massively with the Eras Tour and how an artist like that that's been around making commercial music for 17 years is able to resonate with people that are 5 years old, 15 years old, 25 years old, 35 years old, and on, all these age groups. That younger demographic is largely because of TikTok. So when she has this opportunity to release this album, and we'll get into some of the specifics about it, but I wouldn't have seen her wanting to do it any other way.
It's a very smart business move on her part because she's benefiting from, I don't want to say less competition on the platform, because obviously there's still a lot of other music. There's tons of non-UMG artists. It's not like there's like this huge gap in music on the platform, but there is sort of that, you know, feeling like maybe there's a little bit more room or for her to make a splash there. So it is sort of a genius business move. And that's the other thing is I'm like, if anybody should understand, it's UMG, which has been extremely, I think, smart, whether you agree with their moves or not, and how they've gone about the year so far. So I feel like I'm watching the like succession of the music industry with all of this that's going on.
If this is the succession, then who's the rogue capitalist that's like, fuck you all, I'm doing it my way? Because whoever that person was on the show, that's who Taylor Swift is. Based on my knowledge of the situation, this was an album that Taylor had initially planned to put out a month earlier. However, based on this dispute happening between TikTok and UMG, the call was to say, hey, let me push this back one more month to release it in April. Hopefully there is a decision that can be come to at that point. But when it became clearer and clearer that that wasn't the case, then it was the decision to say, hey, we're going to do this our own way. And as you've seen the reports from Wall Street Journal and others, this was part of the contract that Taylor Swift had had when she had signed on with Universal. And she had the clause in there so that she could do direct deals with direct companies. And this is exactly that type of opportunity here. One thing that is interesting with this, though, is that with both Universal and TikTok, that's the underlying crux that we have here, the two companies not being able to see eye to eye with this. And I think we can get into it in a little bit. But before we get there, I do just want to pause and say that I think Taylor definitely has a unique deal. And yes, there are numbers of superstars and talented artists that are on that roster. We saw Ariana Grande release an album last month. She is also on Republic as well, so she's on the same sub-label, but she didn't have her album and her music released on TikTok in that same type of way. There were a few songs here or there that were able to get through, and I think that probably says more about TikTok's technology not necessarily being able to flag all of the original audio that can come through the specific releases. But if you're an artist like that, I have to imagine that you're watching Taylor Swift now put her music directly on. And if you're in Ariana Grande's camp, you're like, what the hell? Well, if I knew that was the case, then what if I waited longer? Or what if I did this? Because I'll be honest, ever since Eternal Sunshine came out, I think it had its weak moment. And I haven't heard much buzz about that album since. And I think the numbers on the charts also reflect that. That isn't just me and my purview. It was something that unfortunately came and went for one of the biggest artists that you have on the roster. So it's kind of hard not to imagine, did TikTok play a factor in that, especially given that last I checked, she was one of the top five artists in the US that had presence on TikTok that they shared in their year-end 2023 report.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those moments where there will probably be a ripple effect where, because of what's happening now, in the future, artists want something like some carve out like this built into their contract. The question is, as you alluded to, how many artists really have that leverage, not only to get that in their contract, but also to get TikTok on the phone, any other platform that wants to spend the time out of their day figuring out a direct deal with that artist. So you have to be at a really high stature to even be able to do that. But I've been paying a lot of attention to Kristen Robinson's coverage at Billboard of this, because she's done a lot of really good reporting. And she was recently writing about how lawyers are saying they are starting to think about carving out these different clauses in contracts because of the artists wanting to be able to keep their music on a platform like TikTok at a time like this. And that to me is also really fascinating, because I think it exposes also the fact that so much of this debate is, it's about UMG and TikTok and the big rights holders and the big platforms. How much any new deal will actually benefit any individual artist is a different story. And I tend to feel that, unfortunately, the artists and the songwriters are sort of the pawns in this whole debate. And the fact that so many of these artists and songwriters, as Kristen has written about, want to get out of this and want to actually be able to use the platform. I agree that TikTok and many platforms should be paying the music industry more, but I think that ultimately the benefactors of that will be the big companies, not the individual artists. And this kind of puts that in plain sight.
I believe there are artists that are likely calling TikTok now, and they saw what Taylor Swift did and they're like, okay, how can I try to do that? I haven't heard any confirmation from any artists, but when I look at upcoming releases, especially those from UMG, Billie Eilish is releasing an album on May 17th of this year. I have to wonder what those conversations are like. The Weeknd has been rumored to release an album later this year. The Weeknd, the person that has the most millions of followers on Spotify, the person that has the most listened to song on Spotify. If you're talking about who is releasing commercially successful streaming music, it's him and it's Taylor and it's a handful of other people. I have to imagine that those conversations, and especially someone like Drake who releases new music or new album every 8 to 9 months at this point, you have to imagine that those conversations are likely there as well. And I like the point that you mentioned too about the pawns, because it really does seem like it is the corporations that are making moves, but I think it even goes one level higher up than that. And we look at some of the moves that UMG has specifically been making ever since UMG went public. This was back in September 2021. Very different company, and all of the things that we've seen that have had more ripple effects and pressure, whether it is the streaming thresholds, the price increases, this dispute against TikTok, some of the other letters that we've seen from Lucian about whale noise and things like that. All of these things line up to telling me who is the real person that is in charge here. And it's not Lucian Grange, it's Bill Ackman, and Bill Ackman from Pershing Square Holdings, who owns, last I checked, around 10% of UMG, a very sizable stakeholder, and he's the one calling shots. And he has said in very different statements that he sees music specifically in UMG as a great business with an aspiring future, a capital light business, sees the value of this back catalog, sees the value of this shallow catalog specifically from these artists that they have on the roster. And it's no longer the situation where this is a company that's just chilling under the Vivendi portfolio and making money. This is a publicly traded asset. And if they're leaving money on the table, he's going to exploit it. So that's to the point where, from things I've heard, there was a deal that was on the table at the end of last year, and they're ready to go. And it's Bill Ackman that comes in and is just like, no, this is not what we're doing. So then everything just trickles down to the real person. And when you think about, okay, how much does the average artist and their interest and what they care about in line with what Bill Ackman cares about? How much do the fan bases of these artists have in line with what Bill Ackman cares about? So I think a lot of times we talk about who the decision makers are and we think that it's the label heads, but it really more so is Bill Ackman and Len Blavatnik and folks like that that really are the people that pull the strings in this industry.
To bring what you said and then look at it from the other perspective of the artists, it's like at the highest level, a Taylor Swift is valuing the promotional aspect of TikTok above the revenue, which flies in the face of this whole argument of exposure doesn't pay the bills. But then you go to the artists that are lower on the totem pole, so to speak, they're never going to earn a huge amount of money from their music being used on TikTok. So the money is not as significant to them either. And you get to this place where it's like, who is this really benefiting?
Especially because Taylor sees this as a promotional tool, not only for the recorded music that her contract with Universal is in place with, or the publishing with UMPG in place, but she's looking at it for touring, for merchandise, for all these other things that UMG is not directly related and connected with the revenue stream from that perspective. So there's also some different incentives here that play into it. It'll be fascinating to see how things kind of continue here with this, but I do think that for some of these artists that will be releasing new music, especially in the next year or so, we'll probably see them continue to try to make some pushes one way or another. But at the end of the day, I think there's a few things that may likely change here. So one, this does put Universal in a weaker position with regards to its negotiations, because if the biggest artist in the world, the most commercially successful artist on your roster, now wants to do a direct deal with you, and some of those other artists that are of similar stature are going to try to follow her lead, what leverage does Universal have when it is asking for even more from TikTok? So this is something else that gives TikTok extremely strong leverage in this. And it's just so interesting how the pendulum has swung a bit, because when Ariana Grande had her album, the narrative was, oh, look, you had a successful number one without TikTok where you can stand on this. But now this is an even bigger blow swinging back in the other way to then say, okay, well, if you have these artists now off, what does that do for you? And I think this honestly will lead us to seeing a resolution that happens a bit sooner on the timetable rather than later. I don't know if that'll be months from now or who knows how long, but I do think that this weakens UMG's position considerably.
As we know, everyone's TikTok feed is incredibly different, but I have to say I haven't noticed as huge an impact as I thought I would from the removal of UMG and UMPG. It seems like the ecosystem of influencers and users and everything are still functioning just fine and are using other music. And it hasn't been this disaster that maybe UMG was hoping for. I remember like the day that this happened, thinking, well, if TikTok doesn't have a huge problem, this plan is really going to backfire because it actually might prove the exact opposite of what UMG intended. And now not only that, but they have their biggest star going directly against the plan and going direct with TikTok. So yeah, I think it definitely weakens their position. And I do think that for TikTok, they know that the platform is in a better place for users. If UMG's music is on the platform, I think they want a deal. I think it's beneficial for everyone. There is still this really symbiotic relationship, I think, between TikTok and the major labels. But I think that they're going to go back to the negotiation table with maybe UMG in a weaker position. And the other thing is, this is a point that Mark brought up, Mark Mulligan at Midia, the other day to me that I hadn't thought about before, which is what Universal did by pulling the publishing and whether they intended to or not, affecting a lot of like rivals' recordings. Now that they've played that card and shown that that's a thing that you can do and the impact that it might have, what's to stop Sony Publishing or Warner Chappell from trying to pull the same move to take down a Universal hit on TikTok or on another platform, especially now that these licensing deals with social platforms are increasingly important. So now that they've sort of played that card, it's on the table for someone else to play in the future. So again, with like the ripple effects, I think that there's going to be a lot of them.
Right. If you're in Universal's camp, what you're hoping is that decision as well, specifically with the publishing and how tied the publishing is to other artists that are signed to Warner or Sony or other indies as their major, you're hoping that they will join the picket line with you once their deals expire and say, hey, we're with you. We're not going to do a deal until these rates come to that way. Who knows how long that may be, and who knows if the other parties want to play that game, because we clearly see how that is. I mean, if Sony does a deal and then all of a sudden Harry Styles and Adele and all of the other stars on Columbia want to do direct deals, then how does that work either, right? So there is a bit of a chicken and egg thing of what people are seeing. But the one thing I do want to go back to, and that's a point that you mentioned, was someone like Taylor Swift valuing the engagement that she gets from the promotional platform and weighting that more than the direct money that comes through. And it's even more interesting with Taylor because she values that even more than the money that she was additionally offered as part of this deal. So this is one of the things, to my understanding, that I think is pretty interesting to spell out with this. But as the Wall Street Journal had reported, there were discussions that were going on for at least a week between Taylor's camp and Universal's camp about this back and forth and her decision to do this a direct deal with TikTok. And Universal had offered Taylor money additionally on top of, you know, obviously what she would get from any deal that would come through if she was able to hold the line and stay with the UMG side of things. And she's the one that then chose to still do the deal directly. So even if you are getting direct money, it still isn't enough, because at the end of the day, we know Taylor Swift, sure, may be driven by money to an extent. She's a capitalist, but not in the same way as being able to reach the fans, get all the engagement there, and be able to have that influence and be able to build that connection. And obviously the revenue that comes from that, like, that's the bigger push there. So that's even at the highest level. And then that obviously trickles down when you have many other artists that, yes, people are in music because there is a financial component to it, but they also want to make sure that they can reach their fans and do that in any way possible. And that's why I think any of these discussions that you and I've had over the years, whether we've talked about our episodes on radio, our episodes on TikTok, this whole debate between promotion versus consumption and which bucket that entity falls under has been kind of an ongoing discussion. TikTok sees itself as promotion. Universal Music Group sees it as consumption, the same way that it looks at YouTube and Spotify and any of the other DSPs. And of course, the age-old crux debate here is whether or not a snippet of a song counts as promotion or consumption. But I feel like that is where we are. And this is just another example of that. And at the end of the day, the artists are always going to put pressure on to make sure that they can enhance their promotion. And I think we're seeing the rub even more so when the benefits of that promotion involve revenue streams and incentives that don't always necessarily align with recorded music publishing and the assets that the major record labels own. Let's take a quick break for this week's chart metric stat of the week and dive into some of these Taylor Swift and TikTok numbers. Her most popular song on the platform is 2019's Cruel Summer, the late bloomer song that blew up in 2023. In April of that year, there were only around 2,500 posts on the platform, but by September of 2023, just a few months later, it had crossed over 2 million. The song blew up on the platform, became one of the signature songs of the summer, and to be clear, that stat is only capturing the original audio that is on the platform, because there's likely many more versions and iterations of Cruel Summer that are on TikTok. Let's get back to the episode.
And I think the other thing that has changed about that debate of like promotion versus consumption, time spent on these platforms and also just time spent creating content is now directly competing for music listening time. Whereas these things used to kind of operate different spheres, or you could listen to music while, say, scrolling on Instagram. You can't listen to music and also have TikTok open. It's like a sound on app. And with just content creation growing as an activity for people, it's now sort of in direct competition. And speaking of misaligned incentives, we're now in this position in the music world where social platforms are increasingly important as, I want to say, consumption, not just marketing. Yet for the social platforms, it will never be in their business interests for music to become crucial to the platform to the point where they have to pay more for music licenses. So again, we're just in this situation of like misaligned incentives. I think that this, I mean, it's always been true and maybe obvious to some people that, you know, for TikTok, they're never going to want music to be so successful that it just becomes even more expensive for them. But I think this whole debate kind of exposes that more. And it also exposes how much more of a problem this is becoming as social becomes more tied to the music industry. I feel like we need to figure out not how to like de-emphasize social, but how to, I don't know, do we need a social platform that will put music first? We need a place where when music succeeds, the platform succeeds, everyone succeeds. And is that possible? Because right now there's always a winner and a loser, and it's just really hard to align.
Where do you put YouTube in that category?
I think YouTube has more of a potential to be that space music needs, where music isn't just an enabler of social. Social is an enabler of music. And I think that the way that they position Shorts as a element within YouTube proper and the connection to YouTube Music like also helps with that. And they're kind of building this ecosystem that ByteDance and TikTok Music still haven't really been able to connect the dots on. So I think that YouTube is in a better position, but I still think that it's kind of a tricky balance.
Yeah, I do think that YouTube is probably the one that's closest along there. And as we talked about in the YouTube episode we recorded, I think that a lot of the push, especially since Lior Cohen has been head of music there, he's tried to improve the relationship. He's spoken specifically about the payouts from YouTube to the rights holders, and his goal is to exceed Spotify and have YouTube be the primary home for that. And I think that there's a path there, as you and I talked about in that episode. But I do think that certain things still regarding payouts and things like that have still made that distinction a bit fuzzier in a lot of ways. And even though Spotify has probably been the industry painted as the industry villain with regards to payouts and people having issues with that, the payouts have been even less on YouTube. And that's because I think it has straddled between promotion versus consumption, and even more so, especially when you look at YouTube Shorts.
And like TikTok, music isn't the only thing that's on there. YouTube has gaming, they have comedy, they have all sorts of things that they don't have to pay to license the content for. And then with TikTok, they've been going deep on e-commerce over the past couple of years. So like these companies have other avenues, whereas music, it's a tricky position because this whole debate, I always say, has always been about who needs the other more, right? Does YouTube need the music industry more, or does music need YouTube more. And I think it's becoming harder to tell. It's becoming harder and harder to tell these days.
I think the people on the inside know because they have the exact stats on the viewership. And even some of the things that we've seen where we get the numbers of the people that are subscribed to YouTube Premium and YouTube Music overall, we don't necessarily see the two of them separated in that way. There's some back numbers you can do to try to get some estimates, but being able to understand, okay, how many minutes spent watching this type of thing versus the other, I think it's a little tough, but I think we'll eventually probably get some more context there. But one thing I do want to, that I've been thinking about though, going back to the UMG, TikTok, and Taylor Swift part of it, is thinking about this role that we're in and what it says about where institutions, individuals, and all of that is with regards to social media and this current era we're in now. Because music and media overall has had more instances recently where they've talked about very strong individuals and the power that they've been able to flex in ways that wouldn't have been possible 20, 30 years before. In Lucas Shaw's Bloomberg letter, he had brought up the comparison about Stephen A. Smith and Pat McAfee and how much power that they now have at ESPN and some of the things that they've been able to say on their platform, specifically Pat McAfee or controversial guests, and still be able to have them and command top dollar. Granted, I don't think that Taylor Swift's is controversial in that same type of way, but there is something here. But it does make me think, what other areas does this exist? And the closest thing I could think of in the film industry is something like when 4 years ago in the middle of COVID, when Tenet was coming out and everyone is either postponing their movies or trying to make things their way, Christopher Nolan, one of the most powerful directors in Hollywood, is like, no, I am releasing this on 70 millimeter. I am releasing this in the biggest theaters possible, and I'm putting it out this summer, and whether you all like it or not. And I think it was a pain in the ass for a lot of the different stakeholders in different ways, but that's him being a bit of an exception because there's not many other people that can guaranteed have a movie that can gross 9 figures at the box office based off purely original IP in this age, but he's one of them. And that's probably the closest thing I could think of to something like a Taylor Swift, because you were talking about dates being postponed and things like that. Look at the writers and the SAG strike that happened last year. Dune was supposed to come out last year, but then when the strike happened, they postponed it to 2024. It isn't like they just kept Dune and still said, oh no, Dune is going to do a direct deal with the movie distributors. Who cares what the film production studio says? And even then, someone like Christopher Nolan was probably the closest thing, but it still isn't to that same level.
No, I was thinking of the SAG after strikes too. And also just how, like, during that time when it coincided with the Oscars campaigns, a lot of actors were in this position of, do they promote their film or do they stand with the writers and sit these things out? Which is like a, not the same stakes as what we're talking about with Taylor Swift, but like an interesting parallel to me of like confronted with that decision. What are these actors doing? What are these artists doing? What can they do?
A lot of people have been repeating the line of Taylor Swift being the most powerful person in the music industry and this being another example of that. Do you believe that's true?
I mean, I think she's definitely up there. She's one of the most powerful figures, even outside of music. I don't know if I can think of an artist that's more powerful than her right now.
Not an artist, but I think the statement's also been used to include like executives and leadership and those types of folks too.
So is she more powerful than Lucian?
I mean, she's definitely up there. Going back to the earlier parts of this conversation, I would still have folks like Bill Ackman and Len Blavatnik at the top of the list, just given everything that we've said already. Taylor Swift, maybe third, may not be too far along, but I think it's important to state how, yes, it's power for her herself and being able to do things herself. And I think the last thing that she probably did that benefited other people outside of her specifically is probably, I think it was almost 6 years ago when she signed the initial UMG deal and she had that clause about if UMG ever sold its shares in Spotify, that they would then have some level of attribution that goes to each of the artists respectively. I've heard some question marks about whether or not that would actually go into practice as planned, but I think that, yeah, she's probably up there, but again, influence does need to extend just beyond you yourself, right? Because I feel like a lot of it kind of stems from that clip that's now become a meme. Taylor Swift is the music industry. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. I feel like part of this narrative kind of like stems from like that whole thing. And when someone like likes someone, it also extends things. Like I remember at the peak of the Eras Tour when people were saying, oh, is Taylor Swift the most famous person in the world? It almost feels like an extension of that, where I do not think she's the most famous person in the world, but I feel like, especially when it's kind of easier to be in, you know, your own bubble and you're only seeing things from your perspective, it can seem that way. But I think there's a lot more nuance to these things.
Totally. Like, to your point, I think in terms of being able to completely control your outcome, she is one of the most powerful people in the music business. In terms of being able to control what happens to others, not as much. There's a lot of nuance to it, but I'm really glad that.
And I think too, a conversation like you and I've talked about, whether it's super fans or other topics that have been central to the industry, and how this specific conversation, even though we are talking about one company, another company, and one artist, it speaks to a lot of things. I think the other thing underlyingly, and they could probably wrap a nice bow around this, is that it just speaks to the different incentives that each of these companies have and how fragmented the industry is. And while fragmentation can be good because it can spur a lot more creativity and different thoughts and different companies that pop up, I think it's always interesting to read the headlines or just see different partnerships that can come up to be like, oh, cool, look at that. There's a different company, and it probably could have been tougher for that company to have been built in-house in one of the bigger companies. But on the other hand, I think the challenge is that artist is looking at everything that is related to their careers, and their managers are looking at everything that is related to their careers. That's how they're monetizing their music, how they're monetizing their publishing, how they're monetizing their merchandise, their touring, their festivals, all of those things. So when you have these big companies that are really only focused on their specific corner of the pie, and they're trying to make that pie as big as possible, it's important to remember how important is it for the artist to increase that pie relative to all the other things that the artist has on their table.
Do you think this whole thing has ironically made more artists say, hey, I really need to own all my rights so that I have more power in these situations? Or no, because of what we said of, it's not like everyone can get TikTok on the phone and do a direct deal.
I think it's definitely something that's aspirational. And even if you're not at that level, you're probably talking to your manager or talking to your team to see if you can do that. So I do think there's a bit of an aspirational way there that exists in every field to some extent. And I think you look at it in hip hop, where you look at someone like Jay-Z. Jay-Z goes and becomes the businessman. He becomes CEO of Def Jam. And now a whole generation of artists want to become CEO of Def Jam or want to be able to go do big things, right? You look at someone like Michael Jordan and all of the superstar treatment he had and becoming an owner of a team. And now how LeBron and other people want to become owners of teams. Sometimes it really is this central figure that can make the industry and make the rules bend to their favor. And because people relate to people, they relate to stories, those are the things that carry over and can ring true. So I do think that a lot of people will try to resonate with that and connect with that. But as you and I've talked about in numerous episodes about why something unique to Taylor Swift, who becomes a commercially known star in 2006 and rising up since then, came up in a very different era than anyone trying to replicate it now, it's as unrealistic as Taylor Swift herself had a dream to become as big as the Beatles or as Michael Jackson were during their prime. It's like every generation has their relative superstar that has reached the heights, but it probably just isn't going to be the same as the people that came before them in that way. But that doesn't mean it still can't be aspirational.
Honestly, beautifully put. put a bow on that. Answered my question.
The other thing too that we should say before we wrap things up though is that it'll probably be interesting to see what other types of direct deals that Taylor Swift and her team may try to do in the future with other entities. You take a step back and look at what she's done in the past year. She did the direct AMC deal to release her film and bypass the distributors. And you could read some of the tea leaves on that. And one of the pieces that we had released through Trapital had talked specifically about how there were different distributors and others that felt confused. They thought it was a direct thing with AMC and it wasn't going to be available in any other theaters. Was money left on the table in different ways? But Taylor did in the way where the economics worked out for her in that way. So she's done direct deals with AMC. She's done direct deals with TikTok. And you just look at the way the industry is changing and evolving. Could there be a direct deal with some AI training tool? Think about all the people that may want to play and augment with Taylor Swift's voice to some extent and what that could look like. I wouldn't be surprised if we see something like that happen down the road.
I remember seeing in Network Notes, previously Motive Unknown, the newsletter earlier this week, Darren Hemmings was talking about, I have to wonder if Universal is thinking right now, how can we make sure that no artist ever reaches this level of power again? So yeah, on the other side of the coin, that's probably happening too.
It's the ultimate chicken and egg, right? If the artists don't get to that level, then no one is following what you're doing to begin with. It's hard to run a team when everyone is just hitting singles and there's no Grand Slam hits. However, if the artist gets to that level and you and them can't see eye to eye and they have the power to go around you and match that same level of success, then there's an issue. Before we wrap things up, any other thoughts on Taylor, UMG, TikTok, and how this continues to play out?
As an analyst, as a researcher, this is a really wild, massive experiment playing out in real time of a lot of questions we've always wondered about. What is the impact of TikTok and all of these things? So it's been really interesting to watch. And yeah, we'll see how it continues to play out. Thanks for having me on to talk about it.
Of course. This is a fun one. Appreciate you coming on. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.